Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT on FM News 101.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nation. That would be Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Super Producer Reynolds, high atop our command post here in downtown Portland. A little quieter outside today than it was yesterday here in downtown, and we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. We are less than 25 days till the election, and I don't know about you, but I'll be glad when that sucker is over with. Anyway, today we have a great privilege here on the Nation. We are talking to Simon Majumdar. He's a British and American chef, an author, a television personality. He's been on the show before briefly, and that's why we're having Simon back. He's also an author, Fed White and Blue, Eat My Globe, which I started reading the other day, Simon. I'll tell you about that in a minute. It was fun. And Eating for Britain. Simon's also coming to us today from Los Angeles. He's a little under the weather. He's got a bit of a cold, and he's drinking his favorite beverage, which is tea. But that's okay. We like that. Anyway, and we thought we'd play a little Eric Clapton today throughout the show for Simon. So, Simon, welcome to the Nation.
It's good to be back. I know last time I was on, it was just a very short little visit, so I'm delighted that you invited me back. Usually, I only get invited back anywhere to apologize for the first time.
No worries about that on this show. Trust me. Trust me. And you're going to be okay? This is no deadly disease you've contracted? It's just a little head cold or something?
It's just a little bit of a head cold, and I'm trying to get rid of it before I head off to, I'm off to Spain and to Africa shortly, so I'm trying to get myself fit as a fiddle before I go off on my travels again, which, as you know, we spoke as before, I spend as much time as possible traveling around the world and the U.S., so I like to try and keep my fitness up.
But you have to. I've logged over 2 million miles in the air in my lifetime, and I can tell you, you got to be tough to do that in a way. Simon, your general background, just give us a brief thumbnail. I know what it is because I've done a lot of research on you, but give that to our listeners.
Absolutely. Well, I come from a very different background from the job I'm doing now. I started off in book publishing in London, and then almost exactly a decade ago, I quit my job. After a breakdown, to go around the world, my mother had died, and the business I was running or helping to run was failing, and I just decided I needed to do something else with my life. And food was always a great obsession. I had one of the first food blogs anywhere in the world. I had written for some newspapers, and I quit my job to go around the world to eat. And that was the book you mentioned, Eat My Globe. I had no intention of writing a book at that point, but it kind of just emerged out of this journey to 31 countries I went to in a year, and I did everything from riding on the Trans-Siberian Express to picking grapes in South Africa to picking tea in Darjeeling and making whiskey in Scotland. I mean, it was an amazing experience, and in fact, my first barbecue experience, a big barbecue of cooking it, but then was my first visit to the American Royal. And on that journey, I met my wife, who's from LA, and came out here to, you know, hang out with her a lot. And ended up, you know, getting married and moving to the United States. And that was the beginning of this rather extraordinary second life of mine, where I've been, 2 years anniversary now of becoming an American citizen, and this rather, you know, interesting new job I do working on the Food Network and food and travel writing.
That, by the way, congratulations on becoming a citizen. That's an interesting journey all in itself. I know that. So your general observations about food. You've traveled the world. You just said that, of course. And I've been fortunate to be in many parts of the world also. But the one thing that we all have to do is we all have to eat. But it's kind of interesting to me to observe how people treat their food, how big a part of their life it is. Now, in some parts of the world, it's a maintenance program. because they don't have a lot of food and they don't have a lot of selection. But like in the States and certain parts of Europe, I mean, we almost idolize food in a way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think different parts of the world, I think, treat food equally as importantly, not just for its sustenance abilities, but even in parts of the world where they don't have much food. And, you know, I'm mentioning going over to parts of Africa, which I've visited. They treat it as a way of showing hospitality and love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that's really key to me. Food is the great unifier. Wherever I've been in the world, and it's 70-something countries now, food is a way that people have of showing their hospitality and their love of you and their love of their country, because they might not be able to speak your language, but they can still speak the language of putting a plate of food in front of you. And I tell stories of people sharing meals with me in trains in Morocco, or in courtyards of family homes in Senegal, or in the deserts of Jordan, or I could name hundreds of them. And people using food as a way of just welcoming me to their country and showing off their country. And I think of food as a great unifier. And one of the things I do every year with my wife, we drive around the country and we have this thing that we go on Twitter, if people look it up, or on my website, called Give Us a Bed, I'll Cook You Dinner. And we ask people to invite us to their part of the world. They give us a bed for the night, and we cook. And the reason we do that, without kind of sounding religious about it, it's kind of almost like a ministry of food, because you get to know people who you otherwise would never get to meet. This weekend, just gone, we were cooking for some young Navy people down at Camp Pendleton who are about to deploy. Now, these are 22-year-old, you know, kids who otherwise we never would have got to meet, but we sat with them all night, we made Indian food for them, and we got to know them very, very well. And I think it's a really special way of getting to know someone over a meal, because you can't argue. You mentioned the elections, which is all rather crazy right now, but you can't argue with someone when you have a mouthful of ribs.
No, you can't.
And I use that, or you can't say to someone, I hate you because you support this person in politics, and then go to them, but could you pass the potatoes? You know, food is a great unifier. So once you sit and eat with someone, you realize they're a human being like you too. And that's very powerful, I think, if you're in a country, you know, we mentioned Jordan, which is obviously an Islamic country, and we're often taught to be fearful and all of these things that happen right now, but you sit down and share a meal with someone there and you realize they're exactly the same as you. And so I think of food in that way. I think it has an almost sacramental ability to bring people together, and that's kind of my mission in life, and it's something I feel very passionately about.
You know, around here, my background, of course, I grew up on a ranch or a farm, whatever you want to call it, and the Sunday dinner table was sometimes a great way to make peace, you know, in your family. You could talk things out slowly. Like you said, you can't talk very well with a mouthful of mashed potatoes, but you could get things brought out, and usually to a peaceable ending, if you will, on that, and using food in that way. I agree with you on that.
It definitely is very, very powerful, and it's something I do all the time. We were just in Missouri doing that with some people there from a great nonprofit organization called Convoy of Hope, and they invited us out to go and cook for some of them, and in fact, it's with them that we're going to go to Africa. So I think partly one of the problems we have sometimes in more developed nations is we have an abundance of food, and sometimes we don't treat it with the importance. We start thinking about gluttony and volume, and you know, and you see all these big pictures on Facebook of huge sandwiches and everybody eating that. And I think sometimes we forget that food doesn't just nourish the body; it really does kind of nourish the soul. And cooking for someone, and I was talking to some young students yesterday in a culinary academy, and I said to them, never forget that when you cook for someone, it is really one of the great acts of love. And never forget that when you cook for someone, they're coming into your house, as it were, and they're your guest. And I think that hospitality element of it as well is very, very, very important to me.
We've only got a couple minutes here, a little less than that, before we go to break, or actually 1 minute. So I want you to think about something, your answer, and then when we come back from break, I'll ask you this. But I want you to tell people about the great salami. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Hey, really quickly, we want to thank the folks down at the Mount Angel Sausage Company. That would be James Hoke and his gang for their support of the Quack Shack at the Ducks home games. They've been very kind in letting folks sample a variety of their sausages and meats there. And I can tell you from personal experience, it is very good. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Simon Majumdar here on Barbecue Nation in just a couple minutes. Don't go away.
It's Full Flavored Radio, Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
Come on. Baby, hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT along with Reynolds here in the studio today. If you would ever like to email us, it's very simple to do. It's Barbecue Nation, BBQ Nation. At KXL.com, or if you have a recipe, because we do ask you to submit your recipes once in a while, you could do that at recipes at KXL.com. And Reynolds, you got your big tag here for Facebook?
Oh, my favorite. Facebook.com/BBQNationWithJT.
There you go. How about that? Yeah, it's pretty crazy out here. We've got Simon Majumdar with us now. Now, you've seen Simon on TV. You've seen him on, if you ever watch like Iron Chef. He works with Alton Brown. He's done a lot of things. Him and Bobby Flay are good buddies. And we were talking when we were off the air here for a second when we were running the commercials. I just dug up where they found, and no pun intended there, I guess, the world's oldest barbecue. The items that they cook were like wolverines, Arctic fox, bear, reindeer. It's a 4-foot-wide roasting pit, and it dated back to... I don't know if they carbon dated something out of it or what, but 29,000 BC, and it was found over in the Czech Republic. And they also found lots of like stone tools, spatulas, blades, saws. Like the guy said, it was good for carving out mammoths. I don't know. Could you cook a mammoth there, Simon?
I've cooked some weird things. I suppose you could. I know people in there are parts of the world where they have eaten an elephant, and it's I always find that I actually do practice butchery, and I go to butchery classes and things. Once you start breaking down animals, they're pretty much the same.
Sure,
so I'm sure they still did their pot roast of mammoth chuck. Or whatever it was back in the day.
It's pretty big chuck there,
It would. They'd have to have a big old pot for it.
Big old pot, yeah. When I was in Australia, somebody gave me a piece of kangaroo jerky. Now, that was some tough stuff, I got to tell you. But
That is some tough stuff. But actually, kangaroo meat, ostrich meat, some of the emu meat, some of these other things that people are going to now in search of different types of protein, some of them can be really, really delicious. Mm-hmm. Some not so much, though.
No, but, being a smart ass like I normally am, because it's my job, but, they said, oh, here, you want to try some kangaroo jerky? And I thought, okay. And then I just pull out my Reebok, and I chew on one, then I chew on the other, and they were about the same. So, anyway. Okay, the great salami. When you in the book Eat My Globe, you have some really funny stories in there, and very cute. But tell us about the great salami.
Well, I think the Great Salami was one of the first things I wrote about because I was trying to explain to people our family obsession with food and that everything in our life seems to be revolve around food to the extent that my 85-year-old father is in Spain right now and has been emailing me every day pictures of all the things he's eating and drinking, and that's a daily occurrence with our family. There's like a constant crisscross of pictures of food from around the world wherever we happen to be traveling. And my older brother... Robin, who is definitely the typical older brother who made my life. He's a wonderful guy now. We're older, but he was very definitely made my life a misery as an older brother. And I have a younger brother and a sister. And one day when my parents were out, he'd been put in charge, which was the most frightening thing that could ever happen to us because he just made our life heck. And so he decided to declare himself the god of our house in Yorkshire in England. And he set up a stool on the sofa, on the couch. He sat on top of that, wrapped a curtain around himself, made himself a crown, and he had a broom as a scepter. And he made us crawl on the floor and worship him. And he took upon himself, because of food, of course, being the important thing, that his name was the Great Salami. So we basically had to crawl along the floor for, about half an hour going, oh, salami, oh, salami. And even to this day, I mean, Robin's rapidly approaching 60 now. I'm in my 50s, but he's still known in our family as the Great Salami. So it's one of those things that I always use to people to go, even back then, our life was all about the food.
Oh, yeah. No, it's... I thought that was such a funny story. Now, you have a real affinity for Spain. I know you just said your father was there, but you like to go there as often as you can. And what I'm interested in, too, is we've got about 3 minutes before we got to go back to break, but I've worked with a couple of times some Basque people. We have them over in Eastern Oregon here, and they were showing me how they cook their lamb and things like that. What's unique for you about Spain and the way they like grill their meats?
Well, I think there's a few different areas of it. I mean, one, they grill a lot of different meats. So you'll see goat and lamb and very young lambs and suckling pigs. So they like some of these kind of baby animals, as it were. So suckling pig is something that's usually 2 or 3 weeks old. You could fit it in your own stove. And it's a tiny little baby pig, which throws some people, but it's creamy and juicy. And they love to cook every bit of the animal as well. And for me, I think the biggest thing that comes out of Spain is the Iberico ham and the Iberico pork, which is a particular breed of pig that is produced primarily in western Spain. And it makes the best ham anywhere in the world. And they use it very much as a way of expressing their identity. The Spanish eat 40 million hams a year. In that country, and it was a way hundreds of years ago that they expressed their kind of Christianity, because they could eat pork when it was conquered by the Moors. Sure. So I love the fact that the food is used as a way of expressing identity, and to the Spanish, not being able to eat ham is something that they could never countenance. You see it everywhere, and it's wonderful. I just love their approach to food, though. It's so joyous. And I think anywhere the Spanish have been also has a joyous approach to food. So I love the Philippines. I love Mexico. Anywhere where they went, to colonize, obviously had lots of problems because of their colonization. But one thing it did leave behind was a real joy for food. And you won't meet many more places like Mexico or the Philippines where food is treated with such, like I said, such passion. And I think that all comes from the Spanish approach to food. It really is seen in such a joyous way. And that's whenever I go there, I'm going to Madrid, and I think Madrid's the best eating city in the world.
There you go. I want to say hi to a couple of our affiliates really quick, KLBM in LeGrand and KWRO in Coos Bay. And our thanks also go out to Painted Hills Natural Beef for their support of the Quack Shack. Painted Hills Natural Beef produces some of the best beef in the world, and I've been around and eaten a few dead cows, you might say. So we thank Painted Hills. We're going to be back with more of Simon Majumdar. We're going to see if Simon is also up for the lightning round here in a little bit. Don't go away. This is the Barbecue Nation.
Got a question for JT? Call him right now at 503-417-9KXL or 877-733-1011.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Reynolds, and we've got Simon Majumdar, sick in bed, but he's got his tea and he's propped up enough to talk to us today, and we appreciate that very much. Simon, what have you noticed over the years, especially the last, say, 5 years of people's changing in their eating habits, not only here in the States, but in Europe and England and around, and more of the metropolitan areas in your travels? What have you noticed about that?
Well, I think we're kind of emerging from, and I think a lot of this is still a throwback to the Second World War, we're emerging from this shadow of highly processed food and convenience food that, you know, came after the Second World War. And I think we're reaching an age now where people are becoming much more interested where their food comes from. I know you've done some shout-outs to some of your friends there, and people are talking about where their food comes from, their natural beef, their produce. And so they're becoming a lot more interested in the provenance of their food.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe, I'm really excited about the United States right now. I honestly believe we're on the verge of a golden age for American food, and I'll tell you why. I mean, there's lots of reasons, but one, I think there's this real curiosity about where food comes from and the rise of great craft industries. So, you know, we're seeing a huge rise in beer distilling, cheese making, bread making, you know, people really going back to old-style traditional ways of making food. I think we've got young chefs who have been in some of the bigger towns, the LA, Chicago's, New York's, but had to leave because of financial difficulties. Those places are so expensive to live in. And they're going back to smaller towns, but with great training and great skill, and opening restaurants there. And some of the best meals I've eaten anywhere in the country have been in smaller towns that you kind of almost didn't know were towns. And I think the third thing, and we talk about this quite a lot recently because obviously immigration's in the news, but we're getting these second and third generation immigrants from Thailand and Vietnam and the Philippines and Mexico and all kinds of interesting places who are bringing their traditional skills into the American kind of culinary vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing, so what we're getting is this real mix, and I'm so excited, you can probably hear it in my voice, about what's happening in the food right now. And I'm going to towns, you know, like I said, outside that you kind of even didn't know were towns, and stopping at restaurants. Yeah, I was in Fresno recently for the Food Expo, and I went to this place called the Annex Kitchen, and there's a young chef there, Jimmy Pardini. It's an Italian restaurant. But he made me this beautiful agnolotti using the corn from the University of Fresno Gardens, because they have a big program there. And it's one of the best things I've eaten all year. And this is, you know, in Fresno, to Fresno. It's not normally held up. It's known for growing things, but not necessarily for its food scene. But it was outstanding. It was probably the best thing. And I've eaten in Paris at 3-star Michelin restaurants this year. I've eaten in London. I've eaten in all over the world. And I still would hold up this dish from Fresno as one of the best things this year. And this is, again, a chef who moved from Los Angeles up to Fresno so he could buy a place and raise his family and all of that. And so I think that's what's happening now, and I think it's fantastic.
I like that. I mean, I like that. And that's not only just in restaurant food, but in barbecues and anything. I think we're getting, you know, the traditions are still there, but the freshness, and like you say, getting away from the processed stuff and more fresh, and being able to be more creative with the fresh foods, vegetables and proteins, I think that's really cool to me.
It is really cool. I think you mentioned barbecue. Barbecue obviously has become hugely fashionable right now, and, you know, I've been an obsessive about barbecue for probably close to 20 years when I first started coming to visit the U.S. And I would go, my brother and I would go on barbecue tours where we'd just drive around, you know, whether it was Texas or Missouri or wherever, we saw a barbecue place, and I still do it. And it's becoming much more fashionable now. And my only hope is that it doesn't become unfashionable again, as these things tend to do.
Yep.
And that people really realize that, because to me, barbecue is the quintessential American cuisine, and it's an odd thing that I'm so obsessed with it as a guy who was brought up in England. But I, you know, I cook. I'm very disappointed. I'm going to miss the Royal this year because they missed the dates. But I think the fact that people are really discovering barbecue and excelling at it in new parts of the country is really something special too.
I think it's great. And, you know, when there was always kind of the Carolina style and the Texas style, and now, and I'm not making fun of it, but we have styles every other block in the cities now in barbecue because of the influence. Excuse me. I mean, Michael Simon? He did a thing back in Pittsburgh because he was doing the kind of the Pittsburgh style barbecue there. So it's really interesting to me that they all have their takes on it. There's now the Santa Maria style, and that's been around a long time, but it's gained a little prevalence there, you know. And so I find it all very fascinating.
I really do, but I think what's also fascinating is there are these wonderful old school places. You know, some of the best barbecue I've eaten recently was there was a place called Jones Barbecue down in Arkansas, Marion, Arkansas, and it's a tiny little place. He closes once he runs out. And we turned up just after he closed, and I was kind of taking pictures of his smoker because there was nothing there. And he came out because he had like 2 or 3 pounds of his pulled pork left, and he just kind of gave it to us. And off we sat in the car lot of a Family Dollar with some plastic forks and ate it out of a foil tray. And it was some of the best pulled pork I've ever eaten in my entire life. And I love the fact that you can discover that about barbecue anywhere in the U.S. too.
Okay. That is very good, but now we're going to challenge you, Simon. This is
oh dear.
this is what we call our lightning round, and where these are kind of funky, off the wall questions. You'll have fun with them, and you ready?
Fire away.
Okay.
Don't let me. Can I claim the fifth? Isn't that what you do if you?
Yeah, you're citizens now. You can claim the fifth.
Okay.
Which of these things would you rather barbecue? The Thanksgiving turkey, a Yule log, a Christmas goose, an octopus tongue, or the Easter bunny?
A goose.
Okay. What have you learned so far about dealing with chefs' egos?
They all have them, and you just have to be nice. You have to treat them like 5-year-olds.
Okay. What is your favorite seafood to barbecue or smoke or grill, whatever, however you choose to do it?
I love grilling squid. But I'm particularly a tentacle man. I when I go into the store, I just buy a big thing of the tentacles and I fry or grill them with lots of garlic and parsley.
There you go. What is the worst seafood you ever have eaten?
I've eaten rotten shark meat in Iceland that they bury until it totally rots. It's called hachal. It's one of the most foul things on earth.
That's probably how they got the name, that hachal, you know.
Hachal, yes. It's the sound you make when you throw it up.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think is the toughest skill for beginners to learn when they're starting to grill or barbecue?
Patience.
Okay.
They keep opening the pan. And what's that saying? When you're looking, you're not cooking?
That's right. What is the dumbest thing you've ever seen done with a barbecue grill?
I have seen people try to do like a flaky fish on there that just falls into the grill immediately.
Yeah, that's I've seen that a lot. And I'll confess, when I was starting, I did that too. Okay.
Me too.
Yeah. Where's the worst place you ever had to cook?
I've had to cook in a car parking lot in front of a florist's in Oxford, Mississippi, although we ended up having a really good time. They were lovely people.
Okay, if we declared, Simon supreme ruler of barbecue, not like the great salami, for 1 week, what would you decree as supreme ruler of barbecue?
No mopping. I'm not a fan of mopping.
No mopping? Okay.
No.
Then you'll like this next question. Liquid smoke should be used for blank.
Lining your trash can.
You're getting 100 today, Simon. That's it. Elton John or Ed Ames?
Elton John.
Okay. Star Trek or Jason Bourne movies?
Oh, Star Trek.
Okay. Boxers or briefs?
Trunks.
Trunks. There you go. Okay. And let's see. For someone new to barbecue and grilling, what would you recommend them to start with as far as a protein to cook?
I would say something forgiving, like a pork shoulder.
That's pretty easy, yeah. That's
yeah,
pretty
not
easy.
not a brisket, because briskets will come and bite you in the backside, because they're never the same.
No, they're not. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back, finish up the show with Simon Majumdar. He's in his sick bed, but I'm sure he'll stay with us. He's not going anywhere. He's got plenty of tea. And you're listening to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network.
It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT on FM News 101.
Out, Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network and KXL in beautiful downtown Portland. Hope you're enjoying this wet, kind of nasty weekend if you're in the city here. We've got Simon Majumdar for us, with us. I should say not for us, but I guess he's for us. Here on today's show. Really quickly, if you want to email us again, it's barbecuenation@kxl.com or recipes@kxl.com. Don't forget, we have a little promotion going here with the folks over at Smokehouse Products and Bear Mountain Forest Products. They've got the little smoker box that you can put on your gas grill. And if you send us a picture, and Reynolds and I look at it, and you got it's a picture of food, obviously, okay, like a chicken or a turkey or a fish or whatever you're deciding, vegetables, whatever you're cooking, and it's the picture of the week, you will win one of these little smoker boxes that you can put your little wood chips in and put it on your gas grill and turn it into a smoker. And that's all compliments of Bear Mountain and the guys up there in Hood River. They're great guys. Anyway, we're back with Simon now. Simon, is there anything that you have not done that you really want to do with your food or especially with your barbecue stuff? I mean, that's kind of a loaded question with you, I think. But
there's so many things. I mean, the more you travel this world, the more you realize there is of it. There are so many places I still want to go. You know, I've never been to the Jack Daniels or Memphis in May, and I've had offers, but because of timing. So I would love to go down there and hang with teams down there. And I'm lucky. I know, you know, a lot of great people in this business who have really successful competition teams. And, you know, I get to spend time with them. But I really want to go. And I would actually like to start my own very British barbecue team if I have time. And I want to call it Please Form an Orderly Queue. That's what I... Because we British love standing in line.
Oh, yes.
And I would love to have, because it's become a big thing in the UK now. We have a thing called Grill Stop that Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, goes over and helps with. And, you know, I would love to spread the word, because I think it's, as I said, it's just the quintessential American cuisine, and I love sharing it in all its different styles.
It's, well, we talked to, a couple weeks ago, we talked to Brad McDonald, who wrote a book on about Southern cooking, because he grew up in Mississippi, but now he has just opened up a barbecue restaurant on the south side of London there. And it's going gangbusters, from my
understanding. Well, it's very, very popular now. There's another place called Meat Liquor that they're doing really proper barbecue. And there used to be kind of ersatz versions back in the day. But there was a restaurant chain that's now got a few called Bodine's, and they brought over one of the guys, the pitmaster from Oklahoma Joe's, to open it, so it was done properly, and you know, they did a good job, and now people have really got a taste for it there now. It's really popular, and there are lots of competition teams as well, so it's spreading, definitely.
I think Brad described it as something more than just brown food.
Well, I think it really is, and you know, the food scene in London is incredible right now. It really is. I mean, it's, I think, on a par with New York. But this is for us, barbecuing meant grilling, and being the UK, we only had 2 days without rain a year, so it wasn't something that you did very often.
Yeah.
So it's changing now, and people are beginning to learn to love low and slow.
Once they get the hang of it a little bit and acquire the taste and all that, I think it'll be there for a long time.
Oh yeah.
It'll be really good. Simon, stay with us and don't go away. We're going to wrap up the show here, but I want to talk to you after we get done real quickly. We've been very blessed to have Simon Majumdar with us today. You can go to his website, and of course we'll put it on our blogs and our Facebook and all that, but it's Simon Majumdar, that's MajumDar.com. And thank you, Simon, so much for being with us. We appreciate that.
Wow. My absolute pleasure.
Yeah, okay, good. I was hoping you were still there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we've got McGarian's on deck and Bushlack's coming up behind us. And remember, everybody, all our favorite saying here, turn it, don't burn it. You can check out thecowboycook.com if you want to know more about us, and we'll have lots of information about Simon on the website. So for Super Producer Reynolds and myself, I hope you have a good week, and thanks for listening. Everybody down the line on the network, too. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Barbecue Nation is produced by Alpha Media USA in association with JTSD Productions LLC. All rights reserved, copyright 2016. Barbecue Nation is managed skillfully by Reynolds in production compound 4 high above the skyline of PDX, the one with no windows. We'll be back next week with another entertaining and fun edition of Barbecue Nation. At least, that's what we believe. Remember, a good long smolder is better than a 2-minute flameout. See you next week.